Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach. Today we have with us Joe McLeod, who's the founder and head of engineering at AndEnd. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Really delighted to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk with you. And no, I did not mispronounce head of engineering. It is actually the head of engineering. So I'm excited to hear what in the world an engineer is and what your company and your focus is all about. But get us started with a little bit of your background. What's your entrepreneurial journey been to this point in your career?
Sure. So I have done lots of product development in my past. I've worked in big companies, small companies, delivering products all over the world. And that's doing physical products, service products, and digital products. So I've worked in places like Nokia, in mobile phones. And then my last big job was head of design for a company called Us2, where we done digital products. And we were very early on into apps, and we became very specialized in apps. This is a company of like 250 people, and we had an office in London, New York, Sydney, and Malmo in southern Sweden. I guess a lot of people would probably know us for a game we built, which was called Monument Valley, which was really massive on the iPad as much as any other platform, but that was gigantic a few years ago. Yeah. And we've done apps like Barclays Mobile Banking. We done H&M's app. So I've done a lot of product development. As part of that, we also had a sort of incubator type thing where we would get in small companies and sort of help them grow and build stuff for them. So I've had a lot of experience in all sorts of product development.
Yeah. And then what got you then focused on what you're doing now with the end gap?
Yeah, so I had a couple of experiences early on, which made me start thinking about the offboarding experience. So, for example, I had a product which I signed up for, which was a sort of voice animated avatar thing, and it was all celebratory. It was all told to be really good, and it was absolutely awful, and I hated it so much. I really wanted to get rid of it in a more satisfying emotional way instead of just stop paying the subscription. And that made me think, like, maybe we're missing something in terms of the consumer life cycle and the end of that experience. Why are onboarding and usage periods so exciting and the end so barren of any sort of experience or emotion? So that was quite a while ago, and I went off, done my career. And then a few years back, I had an opportunity to look again into this, and I started digging into it, and I found it fascinating. This whole thing opened up. I'd done some research into it. I was going to just write a Medium article and do a conference talk, but I ended up writing a book. That was the first book, the Ends book. And that told the story of why, as a wider society, we don't like endings in an emotional sense, and why that's manifested itself in our inability to grapple with endings in consumerism. So this goes through inability in digital product and service sectors. And then I started to get into it a lot more, and that's where the journey sort of started, really. And that was 7 years ago. I've done lots of stuff since, all based around consumer offboarding experiences and endings.
You know, I'm on your website and I see the graphic, which I like. I like whenever you can summarize something in a nice graphic, that's really neat. But it's the consumer life cycle. You know, you've got the onboarding, usage, and offboarding, and then there's the end gap. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The first thing first of all, that reminds me of like the product life cycle. Like when you launch a product, you've got the, you know, initial push, and you get, you know, the initial sales, and then they start tapering off, and then it's maturity, and then it's decline. So it's very, very similar. But it makes me think of something, which is, why does there even need to be offboarding at all? So shouldn't the focus be for a service or a product? You know, I recognize that there is a potential for offboarding and the end gap, but shouldn't we be striving to you know, crush the end gap so that there's as limited offboarding as possible?
Well, that's a good question that comes up a lot, and I often have to answer this question. I think irregard of any product, consumer product we put out there, there's going to be an ending for it. And I'm not endorsing any sort of where we should encourage people to leave. The honest issue is that people are going to leave our services, products, digital products. Obviously, we're going to try and encourage them to not and adjust stuff to make them feel more comfortable with staying in the service, product, experience. But inevitably, they will end. And without an end, as you pointed out earlier, there's these four characteristics that fall into that end gap. And that first one is that relationship breaks. And we used to value, at the beginning, onboarding usage periods, we really valued that relationship. That was very celebrated. But it really drops off in value in terms of an emotional engagement between the consumer and the provider really quickly. And we lose a lot of brand equity in that moment.
Yeah.
We also have this asset definition loss, where the asset, when we purchase something, I know all sorts of nuance about that product. And but when that comes to the end and I throw it either, you know, in that loft space or in the waste recycling, it becomes this just meaningless thing. Its asset, its definition has been lost. Yeah. The third one is the actors and actions are anonymized. So at the beginning of the consumer life cycle, my identity is very important in that. So I'm an actor in that sort of relationship, and so is the provider. And when we break that apart, we sort of remove ourselves from that responsibility at the end. So therefore, we have this relationship with pollution or like circular economy issues that come up, and we can come back to that maybe later in the thing. And we have issues around that. And I think our identity is also really important to keep together with the provider-consumer relationship. So those actors and actions aren't anonymized. We're taking responsibility at the end. And finally, routes to neutralizing are blurred. So that's the fourth one, is the when I, for example, throw an apple away, I'm really confident that that's going to degrade in the environment or the waste stream really well. But as soon as we increase the complexity of that product, plastic bag or a pen or something, the questions start to come. And at that point, we're starting to abandon the consumer, as it were. So the consumer has loads of questions in that end gap. And ultimately, there's a lot of opportunity in this space to be more informing, sort of doubling down on your brand value as well.
Yeah.
There's, we lose such a lot in this place. Just
well, isn't
in
it very similar
sense?
To offboarding in the HR sense when you work for a company and an employee puts in their 2 weeks notice and leaves? Well, you should maybe have an exit interview and learn why are you leaving? And that is very similar to what we're talking about here. So I agree with the fact that you can, many times you cannot avoid, you know, people leaving and stopping to use the product or service. What I would suggest that, and I'm sure this is part of your methodology, as a brand, you should never have that on the forefront of your mind and just think, oh, well, everyone's going to leave at some point, because then subconsciously and even consciously, you're going to be treating them a little bit at an arm's distance and a little bit more aloof. You should treat everyone like they're going to be around for three decades and going to be your highest evangelist. And then if that mentality, that approach to serving your clients and creating raving fans, that could cut down on people leaving and offboarding. So it could, but it's the right thing to do anyway. And then what you're saying is, when the offboarding happens, how do you make that experience something where it actually can turn into a positive experience? So
exactly.
when can that offboarding actually be a help to a business?
Exactly. So a lot of businesses just overlook that space, really, they plow all their money into the onboarding experience or targeted marketing, when actually very few companies look at this as an opportunity space, and very even less look at it as a place to do strategic work. So you can do so much more strategic work if you start to just open your mind up to the ending as a place to apply experience. And I think we're seeing it come about in different ways in different companies. A good example is maybe IKEA, where they've been really good at filling our houses up with stuff, and And now we feel like, oh my God, what do I do with all this stuff? Do I just throw it away? Do I chuck it into landfill or recycling? But IKEA have now stepped in and started to build secondhand experiences. So instead of me being abandoned, feeling lonely and not having instruction about the product I'm leaving, IKEA steps in again. They've offered me a solution. I'm back engaging with that business, dealing with the end of that Billy bookcase or whatever product you're taking back to them. So there's loads of opportunities, especially with the circular economy. I'm finding more businesses are wanting to find a different opportunity, different strategy, and a fresh thinking about what to do at the end of the product experience.
And you say on your website that one of the benefits is businesses that engage at the end have higher consumer satisfaction. So yeah. I'm always keyed in on certain words from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
And whenever I hear consumer satisfaction, that's a red flag for me, because I do this when I do presentations or when I teach marketing at a class, and I go, okay, how many people think that we all want happy customers? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, no. We don't want satisfied, happy customers, because they're apathetic. We want raving fans. And so what I wonder is that statement, businesses that engage at the end have higher consumer satisfaction. I wonder if that's because at the end, they might feel so uncared for and, you know, apathetic that at least if you engage them, it's going to raise them up to where they're satisfied. You're not going to make them into a raving fan like you hope to do during their relationship, but talk a little bit about how businesses that engage at the end can strive for that consumer satisfaction.
So if I use a couple of examples there, and probably the satisfaction thing is a little bit about the data that I pulled in from that. So I can't remember the details, numbers now, but it was from two sources. One was US cable companies. Really low satisfaction rates, locked into contracts. People find it really difficult to get out of their contracts. Very low satisfaction, and getting lower over the last sort of 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
Against a company like Netflix that's super positive about the end, and they say they're proud of their ending, or I think they call it the end of the consumer life cycle. So they can say, people can come and go as they please. And there's lots of businesses now, gym industries also having businesses that are opening up the end to be easy to leave and easy to come back.
Yeah.
And these are against companies that are locking customers in with these punitive clauses, so they get punished when they want to go. And the satisfaction rates are really different in those industries.
That's a really good point, because there are some like the gym industry or like a membership site where it's like, you know, I want AAA, which is a automobile club where you can pay money for the, you know, period of time in case you need roadside assistance. So maybe I'm going to go on a road trip and I only need it twice a year. So why couldn't I turn it on for a month and off and then on again? But if you are going to lock me into a year or two and I don't need it, I'm not going to do it at all. And same with the gym. If it's like, hey, I'm going to pause my membership, and you get pushback or flack from the gym. Whereas if the gym says, no problem, we'll hold it open for you, we're happy to have you come back whenever, and if there's anything we can do in the meantime, can we give you some private training lessons or videos, we're happy to help you stay healthy. That helps that consumer, that gym member, feel so much better about the brand. And then when their circumstances change, like maybe it's, you know, I'm just traveling this summer, but now that it's fall, I want to go right back to the gym. The door is open for them to feel like, okay, that was a good experience. I'm going right back there.
Absolutely. I really like that example where you can increase your brand by giving them a good offboarding experience. In fact, I've just written an article on the website, which is andn.co. The blog on there, I wrote an article about the coming recession. We're at least going to be in recession in the UK and some places in Europe already. There's going to be a lot of people leaving. And if you haven't got a good offboarding experience, just to your point there, Mike, if people are leaving and not having a good experience as they leave, they're going to not come back.
Yep.
So it's well worth investing in endings now, because there's going to be a lot of them happening.
Yeah. So let's kind of wrap up this thought process with brand equity. And I think that's a broad topic. And I know we could talk for about 4.5 hours just on the phrase brand equity. But talk a little bit about what that does to the brand, you know, at the end. So you might retain that customer to have them come back, but also the word of mouth that stimulates positively or negatively can impact brand equity.
Okay, so I'm going to reference a little bit of research here by a person called Daniel Kahneman, who wrote a book called Thinking Fast and Slow, which is very worth reading. The piece that he talks about is a thing called peak end rule. It's a psychological sort of observation that people remember things in two points, a peak and the end. And what we tend to do in a lot of consumer experiences is aim for repeated peaks. So you're hitting people with, like, oh, that was a great experience. That was a great experience. And we overlook the placement of the end. So if both these points, peaks and ends, are giving 50% of value in terms of good memories, then if you've done a good thing in the usage period and you provide a bad ending, that's going to really demoralize or really ruin that sense of memory and essentially that brand equity.
Because of recency.
And it's really important to make sure that ending is good, and then it can reinforce the good experience that you had at the peak. Otherwise, you're going to neutralize your brand equity as they leave and offboard your consumer experience.
And just like the examples you've mentioned, it is so easy these days to grab the power we have in our pocket, which is our mobile devices, and go on and leave social media comments negatively.
Oh, totally.
Reviews. So that people might think, you know, oh, there's always going to be somebody that's, you know, yeah, but that somebody might be a micro influencer. They might not be a major influencer, but they have the ear of people that they're connected with. And a word here and a word there is going to add up. And so that the impact of brand equity, I feel, is really huge. And it's really interesting because most people, when they think of marketing, it's all on the front end to get buzz and get sales. But inevitably the peak happens, and at some point people move on. Well, what happens when someone moves on? And it could really impact that ripple effect for your whole brand overall. So I think it's really such a neat pocket that you're speaking about. And I know you got a book available. So let's wrap up with this, Joe. What's the best way that people listening can reach out and learn more about what you do and engineering? And again, kind of how we started off with, you know, you're the head of engineering, not engineering, because engineering is a really unique phrase, and that's what we've been talking about, how to maximize.
We can hashtag that later.
You should trademark that, which hopefully
I should do. I've done a lot of stuff around it on social. Yeah. So I've actually written two books, Mike. The first one, as I was mentioning earlier, that tells you basically the history of why we don't do endings in consumerism. And so that's a big sort of sociological, historical piece, goes way back to the plague, goes right through the consumer boom in the US, and brings us down into service, digital, and product sectors. And then a few that came out in 2017. These are both on Amazon. The second book I wrote, and that came out last year in November 2021, and that's called Endoneering. And that's basically a how-to book. So the first one is a why we don't do endings. The second one is a how-to book, how to do endings. And that will help you as a business think about all of the opportunities you can do. It's got lots of models and systems and approaches in that book. And also go to the website. So that's andend.co. It's got loads of stuff on there. And the other thing you can do is get involved in the training. So I do different types of training to become an endoneer. So you can sign up as a cohort. That's a month-long course. There's one coming up in January, so check that out from the website. And let's try and create better endings.
I love it. Well, Joe, thank you so much for coming on. It's a real pleasure
having
you today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.